Up next on What's Bugging Me. Trump agonistes. Will he be arrested, or was he just playing us? And Governor Ron DeSantis, for the first time, is taking shots at the Republican frontrunner. Plus, the banking crisis. Last week, I told you the fear is back. Now, is it really over? And a special segment on changing your life from Joanne Lipman, best-selling author of the new book out this week, Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work.
We need to change, right? Like, we need to take control of our futures. And that was the impetus for the book.
I just love that word, power, as in cue power chords. Hello, my friends. Where, oh, where do we begin? So much going on, a swirl of outrageous stories. Here's a to-do list, okay? Donald Trump, will he be arrested or won't he? The banking crisis, is it really over or is it just beginning? The Fed gave us a major clue this week. It raised interest rates, and Wall Street had a major tantrum about it. The Dow fell more than 500 points. And we have a special segment today on reinventing yourself from best-selling author Joanne Lipman. She's going to talk about her new book next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work. We all could use a little bit of that, and Joanne will show us how to do it. Okay, so it is a very full plate. Let me get going. I'll get to the latest on the Trump trauma in a moment, but first, an unadvertised update on a new chapter of the Twitter Files, Chapter 19. More revelations about the government's takeover of Twitter and other social media platforms. They lied to us about COVID. They hid the truth from us over and over again because they couldn't trust us to decide things for ourselves. And once again, the media are ignoring the Twitter Files scandal. It is looking more and more like they are complicit, as if they too were cooperating with the FBI and the CIA. Now, I printed out all 45 tweets in Chapter 19 from Matt Taibbi. They run on for 20 printed pages, and they show that the government, it didn't just silence speech that was misinformation, okay? Which would have been wrong. It has zero right to do even that. That is a prior restraint on free expression. It is in violation of the First Amendment. But it was even worse than that. The government pushed social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook to silence even information that was accurate, if it might make more people reluctant to get the new COVID vaccines. Now, one villain in all this was Stanford University's censorship operation. It was called the Virality Project. And it worked closely with government agencies and Twitter and Facebook and the rest of them. Now, this Virality Project at Stanford, it reviewed content on a mass scale for Twitter, Google, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Medium, TikTok, and Pinterest. Matt Taibbi tells us this in his latest release. And all of these platforms and government agencies organized quickly, as Matt Taibbi put it, behind, quote, a secret unified effort to control political messaging. Now, that is illegal, ladies and gentlemen. They censored even true stories about vaccine side effects and vaccine hesitancy and people's real feelings. It is shameful, and the media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, most of the rest of them, they are ignoring the Twitter Files. And that in itself is another scandal. I pointed this out on Newsmax TV last Saturday on John Tabacka's show, Wise Guys. Give a listen.
Right. Like the right, you know, I always say, Dennis, that the problem with Republicans is they're so flabbergasted when they're being treated unfairly. But then when they get the ball, they don't have the to right. go give the exact same punishment exactly. back, and they always let it slide.
Right. There's a book called The Fixer by a crisis guy named Mike Citrick. I helped him write it, and there's a chapter that talks about, even with the rise of social media and websites, and it's so fantastic, if the mainstream media do not pick up a story and get behind it, he said, it dies. And my worry now, John, is that we're seeing the Twitter file story fizzle because the mainstream media is refusing to pick it up.
It's disgusting.
Also, check out my earlier episodes on What's Bugging Me to hear more on the Twitter files. It was episodes 2 through 7, I think it is. And like I've said before, remember, guys, I've done more stories on the Twitter files than the entire staffs of the New York Times and the Washington Post combined. Where are you, my fellow ink-stained wretches? Okay, and now to President Trump. And I do mean President Trump. I have met former President Clinton and former President George H.W. Bush, and no one in their circles ever dares to call them the former president. So the trauma of Trump. See episode 16 of What's Bugging Me. It ran just a day ago, the breaking news special that Ricochet posted. For more on this with John Cardillo, a former New York City cop who knows a lot about what's going on in this thing. And the short version is this, and here's what's bugging me about it. If the New York City District Attorney stands down and doesn't have Trump arrested, the story is only beginning. How the DA gave in to pressure. How Trump made up the entire thing to make himself a martyr. He does love being attacked, right? On What's Bugging Me, we know, though, that this is false. Former New York cop and conservative pundit John Cardillo came on the pod yesterday and quoted sources in the NYPD and the DA's office. And this arrest threat is real, and at least half the DA staff is up in arms about it and opposes it.
The rank and file are pressuring the DA not to take this forward to a grand jury, because if he takes it to a grand jury, Dennis, and they hand down an indictment, then the DA is locked in. But there's political pressure from above to do this as a matter of weaponization and political persecution.
This pressure from above, John, it comes from whom?
Well, I was told pressure from above. So if I had to guess, just doing this a long time, Governor Kathy Hochul, New York State Attorney General Letitia James, another lunatic, and probably the Biden administration.
And it feels like Trump will be arrested by somebody somewhere. The Capitol Police for the January 6th insurrection, or by the FBI for classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. Never mind that Biden, you know, also had classified docs. The FBI has always hated Trump. Or maybe he'll get arrested by state police in Georgia for supposed election violations in terms of their Senate race, their Senate election. Just know this, it's all bull spit. It is an American outrage that dimwit Democrats are terrified of Trump and they will never let him run, which will make him even more of a hero to many of us. Now let's get to the banking crisis. I was hoping this thing was over. But the Federal Reserve, unfortunately, came out on Wednesday and raised rates by a quarter of a point. That's 25 basis points. Originally, they were wanting to raise it by 50 basis points, a full half a percentage. So they kind of toned it back to 25 basis points. And man, Wall Street is worried. Stocks plummeted more than 500 points on the Dow. And all the stocks I follow, a few dozen of them on my iPhone, the sea of red, you should have seen it. And this shows you that the Fed is kind of clueless, because it is now clear that the Fed's own policies are hurting banks to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars in losses on government bonds. The Fed raised interest rates way too high, way too fast. You can see that conversation a week ago with Ed Butowski and Jim Iorio on What's Bugging Me. You ought to check that one out. I mean, the interest rates, the borrowing costs are up 20-fold in 9 months or so. It is craziness. The Fed did this to try to stop inflation. But you don't have to crater the economy in the meantime. You don't have to crater the banking system. So in the past 2 weeks, we had several banks wobble. A couple of them go out of business. Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, Credit Suisse looked for a takeover of First Republic. So the big question was, will the Fed stick to its old plan and raise rates yet again on Wednesday of this week, a full half of a percentage point? Would it go to only 25 basis points, a quarter of a percentage point? Or would the Fed retweet, ease off, and just say, gosh, we've seen these bank failures here. We're a little worried about it. Maybe we're just going to pause for a minute. And you'll remember that last week in episode 15, Ed Butowski, my Texas pal and wealth advisor, he said he would bet me and Jim Iorio, he's a longtime options trader, a steak dinner that the Fed would go a full 50 basis points. Well, the Fed didn't do that, thank God, because, man, the reaction would have been even worse. The Fed did go up an additional 25 basis points, showing that it doesn't care that banks out there are underwater in their bonds. Oh, what the hell? We're going to raise rates anyway. And that is just a really bad decision. So let me offer a few facts on this banking crisis. I sure hope it is over, and I prefer to take an optimistic view of something like this. There's been way too much panic in the media over this lately. This is what happens when stocks suddenly tumble and fear suddenly spreads like COVID. I've been taking part in these live calls on Twitter. They're called Twitter Spaces, with thousands of listeners. And it's recorded for playback by thousands more listeners. And some of these experts on these calls, incredibly knowledgeable, very experienced, veterans. But other times, some of them are turning into tinfoil hat conspiracy guys. You know, they're panicking. They're like the Bill Paxton character in Aliens. That was the first sequel to Alien, the sci-fi thriller, right? You know, we're dead meat, man. We're all going to flip and die, man. And of course, he turned out to be right. Avoid panic, as I said in my parting shot in episode 15. Avoid panic. So let's just go up to the 35,000 feet level here for a broader view, all right? First, the banking system is a lot stronger now than it was back in the meltdown of 08-09. I covered that one from a front row seat as an anchor at CNBC. Capital Reserve requirements are much higher now, and the leverage, the amount of borrowed funds that the banks are allowed to bet, much lower than it was in 08. Across the U.S., banks hold $620 million in unrealized losses on these safe government bonds. And this is a survivable loss. They have $20 trillion in total assets. So $620 million is only about $1 on $33,000 in total assets. You can survive that, right? It's just that 25 smaller banks could be threatened here by holding these bonds. And this is according to Charlie Gasparino, my old friend at Fox Business. And these banks, they don't have to take losses on these low interest bonds if they can hold them to maturity. Then they get all the money back. But if their customers panic, the way Silicon Valley Bank's customers panicked, then these banks have to raise cash, maybe by selling the underwater bonds and taking big losses that they wouldn't have had to take. If only their customers believed in them and held steady. So a few takeaways. Most Americans have far less than $250,000 in the bank, so you are safe no matter what. The FDIC guarantees all bank accounts up to $250,000. And those fortunate to have more, you should diversify it among a broader range of banks and accounts anyway. The FDIC is probably going to go up to maybe $2 million in insurance, but you ought to diversify it. Another option is fintech firms like Arc and Brex and Mercury. They can provide close to 5% interest on accounts, and they spread them out in a way that gets insurance for up to $3 million of your money in an account. If you lock up your money in JP Morgan Chase, the Fortress Bank, you're also good there too. And so I think, yeah, the banking crisis is over. And know this, if it isn't over, if the entire world banking system were to go topsy-turvy and tumble into a global panic tomorrow, you should know that the rest of the world's money will come flooding back right into the United States of America to help us prop up our system first, because we are the safest, strongest, most stable place in the world, especially in a crisis. Even now, in the age of Joe Biden and the dimwit Democrats. Next up, have you ever had to reinvent yourself? I have, and it was a harrowing journey. Now a new book can help you do it. It's called Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work by author Joanne Lippman. She joins us right after this.
I'm James Dellingpole. The difference between being called a conspiracy theorist and a journalist these days seems to be about 6 weeks. Ideas that we would have all laughed at pre-COVID seem to be becoming true at an alarming rate. Join me on the Delling Pod, as we keep you on the cutting edge of the news cycle with guests and opinions you won't hear anywhere else. That's the Delling Pod, right here on the Ricochet Audio Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk to Joanne Lippman now about her new book, Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work, which HarperCollins published just this month. Now, Joanne was the editor-in-chief of USA Today and the editor of a business magazine in The Bubble, a star reporter at The Wall Street Journal. She created the weekend section there. She also teaches class now and then at Yale University. Thanks for joining us, Joanne. It sounds like your book might be a perfect survival guide for the insecure world of work in the 21st century. Please tell us about it.
Sure. Thank you, Dennis. I think you actually described it completely perfectly. This is a book for people who are feeling that need, you know, to change your life, to change your career, to change your workplace. And it really was inspired by the moment of time that we're living in. I've been working on this book for almost 3 years from the start of the pandemic when I realized like the entire world was sort of suddenly off its axis. And for all of us, for everybody, we are suddenly kind of, it's like all the puzzle pieces got thrown up and we're saying, wow, where does this land? Where do we go? And what's so interesting, Dennis, is that feeling is still going on now, right? These past few years, we've had the pandemic, we've had economic uncertainty, we have had the great resignation, quiet quitting, burnout at epidemic levels. And there's just sort of a general feeling of, you know, we need to change, right? Like we need to take control of our futures. And that was the impetus for the book. And for the book, what I wanted to do was find stories of people who have navigated massive changes in their work, their lives, their careers, and have they done it successfully, understand their story. So there's a lot of great stories in the book. But also understand the mechanism, the science behind it. So I talked to tons of scientists and experts in these various fields, everything from neuroscience to psychology to management theory, to kind of help us understand how do you navigate these changes successfully.
Nice. That sounds actually quite fascinating. Joanne Lippman talking about her book Next. And now let's talk scope, you know, because whenever we used to do those page one leaders in the journal, you always want to go lead theme and then the scope, how many people affected or whatever. So how many people do you figure may have to consider starting over and reinventing compared with 20 or 30 years ago?
So this is what's so remarkable is there was a study by Pew, I believe it was last year, that they looked at unemployed people and 66% of these unemployed people said they actually want to switch careers. Tremendous numbers. If you look at millennials in particular, millennials, the vast majority of millennials say they're not engaged with their current work. The numbers are stratospheric, and that's why there's this sort of malaise, right? There's this feeling of burnout that work is not working for us. And so I think the numbers are far greater now than they had been in the past. And part of that is because the workplace has shifted over these past few years. We have much more remote work. And people are saying, wait, the old way of working, I don't want to go back to that. I want to understand sort of a new, better way, and also something that is much more meaningful to me, right. I think there was a lot of people who just reprioritized their lives.
I think COVID had so much to do with that. I saw so many people, you know, journalists especially, they've been in a place for 35 years, 25 years, and they decided, I'm not going back. I talked to a lawyer with, you know, Wall Street and Goldman for years. And when he finally had to go back in just one day to his Wall Street lawyer job, and after the lockdown, he just said, I can't believe I did this 2 hours each way every day for 20 years. And so you have this shock to the system and start to think about reinvention. The other thing is a few years ago, ProPublica, run by our former journal guy, Paul Steiger, they did a study showing if you're leaving your job and your age starts with a 5, you're in your 50s, chances are 56% chance that choice is not your own. I would imagine it's even higher now. Now, did you get this idea at all from anything personal in your own career in terms of starting over?
Yeah. So, you know, I, at the beginning of the pandemic, I myself had that feeling. It was the first time there was a major news story ever in my adult life where I was not in a newsroom. I had just finished another book, my previous book. And it was this very discombobulating feeling, like very unmoored. And it really got me thinking about like, wait, what do I value? How do I want to approach this time in my life? And what can I do? So it, you know, I had this feeling myself, and I'd been through, you know, both personal and career, I've been through a number of sort of reinventions, which sure. most of us have by the time you know, even younger people, actually, the people I interviewed in the book range from their 20s to their 90s. And so this is very common. It's particularly common for younger people, by the way, who have like a dozen different jobs by the time they reach, you know,
it's a different world now. And I guess maybe they're more adaptable to reinvention than a lot of the older workers. I think people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, especially could use some advice on this. But do you want to tell us a couple of your favorite stories about people who reinvented themselves and then were better off for it?
Sure. So one of my favorite stories goes back to my early days of the Wall Street Journal, where I went to interview. I used to cover advertising, as you recall. I wrote an ad column, and I was covering at the time. Now, this is when I was like early 20s. I had just started, and I was covering in the 80s, mid 80s, and it was like the burger wars, you know, between Burger King and McDonald's. Uh-huh. And I went to talk to this ad executive, and he said, you know, what I really want to be is a novelist. And he said, you know, I got a book published, and he hands me this book. He was so excited he got this book published. So I didn't really think much of it. I tucked it into my bag. I later read a review of it that said it was like an abysmal, terrible book.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, that stops a lot of us from even trying. I got it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But you know what? 10 years later, I'm like in the other room, I hear this very familiar voice on TV. I go, there's an ad on commercial, and there's my ad guy holding up his latest book, Along Came a Spider, saying, hi, I'm James Patterson. So he is now the most successful writer of our time, the most successful writer ever. He's written hundreds of number one best-selling books. So I went back to James Patterson, who I first met way back then, and asked him to walk me through how did he get from there to where he is now. And he did. And it's an amazing, wonderful story about what it takes to really believe in yourself, even when others do not believe in you, and the kind of stick-to-itiveness that it takes. But there's other wonderful stories there. I mean, some of my favorite are not household names.
Let's hear one that we can think that could be us too. Because yeah. I don't think I'm going to be able to turn into James Patterson, but maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, could tell us another one story.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many, but you know, one of my favorites was a guy who was a banker, and he was looking for a very inexpensive, he had a young family looking for a very inexpensive home for the weekends, because he was in New York City, and they found this kind of fallen apart little farmhouse. And so they buy this as a weekend home, and they fix it up. And he, little by little, you know, they're surrounded by farmers because it was inexpensive, right? It was like,
right.
So they're surrounded by farmers, and little by little, he gets to know the farmers, and then he starts seeing like what they're doing, and he leases out his farmland around his house to this guy who's got cattle, and he learns how to birth the cows, and he just starts like really enjoying this. And ultimately he quit his New York banking job. He was an economist, and he is now a full-time farmer. He's a full-time cattle farmer, and he loves it. He loves it. It's just so cool to see people kind of find their way.
Yeah, a
stay-at-home mom I met who really highly educated woman, but you know, felt very privileged that she was able to stay home with her three children, but also very frustrated because she'd always imagined having a career. So she threw herself into things like the PTA and the school board and those kinds of things. And ultimately realized there were a lot of women like her who were highly educated and skilled women who were at home in the suburbs and had a lot of skills. And so she created a nonprofit, and she's now the CEO, created a nonprofit where primarily women, stay-at-home moms who are highly skilled, are helping local businesses these business owners right. with their finances and their marketing and all of these things. So it's a win-win for everybody. And by the way, she was then, she's now CEO. This company, nonprofit, has grown, and she was elected mayor of Scarsdale, New York. So
nice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's
that's,
one.
That's a big reinvention. Now, a lot of people who have been fired, I think, can identify with this whole idea about reinventing and starting over. I mean, I surely can. Getting fired was one of the most shocking, stunning things of my career. It only happened rather late, with 15 minutes notice, when I left a network and was escorted out. And in doing research and the interviews for the book, did you learn some things about the best moves to make, about important pieces of advice that you wish you had known a long time ago for your own career, maybe?
Oh, 100%. First of all, I have an entire chapter called Necessity Entrepreneurs, which is about people who are forced out of their work. And that, and you know, largely it's women, people of color, and baby boomers. Baby boomers, they're a huge chunk. And as you mentioned earlier, if you have a five in front of your age or beyond, you're very unlikely to be able, you know, you're very more likely to get pushed out and less likely to find another job. But what I found is that very often these people, and the many of the people who I met, ended up in much more fulfilling positions. So for example, there was a guy I met who, 64 years old, had a great career, had a PhD. He did he worked in plastics and in manufacturing, and had a fantastic career. 64 years old, the week before Christmas, gets called in by the new boss and is fired. He goes to dinner with his wife and their friends afterward, pre-planned dinner. He says, "I've been fired." He said, they all laughed. Like, nobody would believe this guy was fired, right? And he said it was so hard because he had so much more to offer and nobody wanted to take it. And yes. What he ended up doing was he ended up creating his own business in plastics, but in kind of recyclable and, you know, more sort of taking all of his skills and turning it into a green business. And I spoke to him, this was 10 years later, and he, you know, still CEO, loving it. He said it's so much more satisfying. He said, you know, it's not the most money he's ever made in his life, but it's incredibly satisfying work. And he actually gave a TED talk where he said, and I love this line, he said, you know, we have all these 30 under 30 lists. What we really need is the 70 over 70 list.
There
and
you go.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that is something weird, is that we get kind of taken out of the workforce at a time when we feel more knowledgeable, more experienced, and we're, you know, socially able to bond with people better. Maybe we're not competing as much. I mean, when I look back to my career and all of the angry fights over passionate issues, that today I would handle differently, you know. Well, let's think about any other points of advice or things to avoid for someone who's looking to reinvent themselves. Here's a question, Joanne. Is it best, to reinvent if you can use that skill set that you're great at versus utterly trying something totally different? I should not become a rap star.
I should not be a ballerina. Yes. So you are 1000% right. So what I found is, and I looked across at different kinds of reinventions, like career or people who came back from failure, people who had great trauma, or even people who had these amazing aha moments of clarity that like were life-changing. And I talked to the different disciplines, the scientists and researchers behind all of these different kinds of transitions who study these things. And even though they're in different fields, they all essentially talked about the same steps. And I call them search, struggle, stop, solution. So search is the first step. And this is exactly what you were talking about, which is most of the people I talked to, in fact, pretty much all of them, ended up transitioning into something that was sort of tucked away in the back, that was a passion, that was a hobby, that was something that came so easily to them that they
didn't already there.
Counted. It was already there.
Yeah.
That was already there. They didn't even understand. And so one of the pieces of advice that I give is, talk to somebody else who can tell you what your skills are, like what you're strong at, because sometimes we don't, it's too obvious to us. We don't even recognize.
That's the search part of it?
That's the search part of it.
And then struggle?
You're like, yeah. And then the struggle is sort of where you've left your old life behind, but haven't quite figured out where the new one is going. And that's the part that we never want to talk about when we talk about, you know, these instant transformations that, you know, American Idol or right. you know, whatever, overnight success, which is just a BS term, because there's always this horrible period that doesn't feel good. But in fact, it may feel like you're spinning your wheels, but that's where all the important work gets done. That's actually where everything's happening.
Good.
The stop is very often, it doesn't always happen for everybody, but very often you sort of, if you've left one thing behind and you're thinking, and you just like bang into a wall and just, you want to give up, or life throws something at you, like you suddenly get fired, or there's a death or a divorce or some other traumatic experience. There was a wonderful guy I talked to who was a phone repair man for years and years and years, but he always drew pictures of shoes. He was really into like these beautiful paper designs of shoes, and he got prostate cancer and at 50 years old. And he said, you know what? If I don't do it now, it's never. So he recovers from prostate cancer, quits the phone repairman job that he's been at for 30 years, goes back to school. And today he's a women's couture shoe designer. So that stop can be forced on you, or you might actually discover it yourself. Yes. And then that's what finally leads you to what I call the solution, which was, you know, the telephone repairman goes back to school and becomes the shoe designer. Yeah.
Right. You know what? Sometimes the only limits are kind of in our own mind, where we think we can't do something or afraid we won't be good at something. And so I guess one of the pieces of advice was you got to believe, you got to give it a go. And by doing that, maybe you end up somewhere else, but you wouldn't have ended up there if you hadn't first given it that effort.
The other thing I would add is that some of the people who I spoke to ended up in places where they didn't intend to go, right? They didn't, it was sort of their talent, skill set led them to a place. So that's another sort of myth about reinvention. If you read all these books like Think and Grow Rich, those kind of books, they will tell you have your goal and then work backwards and you will get there. Right. A lot of these people, and that prevents a lot of people from starting in the first place because they're not sure where they're going. There's a lot of people who are on very meandering paths to end up where they were. One of the women who I profile in the book is, she was a litigator, a lawyer. And during COVID, just to blow off steam, her husband's vegan. So she started playing with vegan recipes he's Italian and she's Korean. And so she started playing with these recipes of their favorite recipes and started doing little TikTok videos using the name that her husband nicknamed her, which was the Korean vegan. Well, she's now a TikTok star. She is such a giant TikTok star that she quit her legal job. And this is now her full-time thing. Like she did not set out to be a TikTok star. That was not her goal.
Right. She didn't set the goal and work backward the way the experts tell us to do. So a little serendipity. I think one of the important points there is, you know what, guys, we've got something like almost, I think it's 35% or almost 40% of able-bodied Americans under age 65, not in the workforce at all, not looking for anything. I think one of the rules there in Joanne Lippman in her new book, Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work, one of the rules might be get up off the sofa and go for something, man. Take an interest in something and have passion for it. You can see what Joanne Lippman has done for herself and the passion she has for her project. Joanne Lippman, what a fantastic visit. I appreciate your coming here. And I wish you the greatest luck with this book. And I hope people will check it out. That's the new book, Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work. You got anything else you want to dismount with?
Dennis, it is a pleasure always to be here with you, and I enjoy watching how you are reinventing yourself too.
There you go. Never stop going for it. Never stop. Thank you so much and have a glorious day, Joanne Lippman.
You too, Dennis. Thanks.
This is Stephen Hayward of the Powerline blog and the Powerline show on Ricochet, inviting you to tune in each weekend to our 3 Whiskey Happy Hour, where John, you and I, along with the pseudonymous Lucretia, Powerline's international woman of mystery, break down the week's top stories and continue our long-running arguments about first principles, and also critique the best whiskeys available in the world. That's Powerline's 3 Whiskey Happy Hour, hosted by Ricochet, and found on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
And now for my parting shot. You just heard Joanne Littman talk about reinventing yourself. And a fracture an old phrase, necessity is the mother of reinvention. That is to say, chances are you will have to reinvent yourself at some point in your life, maybe sometime soon. And a lot of times, this is beyond your control. It is forced on you. Because you get laid off from a job and you can't find work, or you get divorced, or your industry erodes and shrinks right beneath your feet. I've had these things happen to me. I know from experience. ProPublica, a nonprofit media outfit, published a story a few years ago saying that almost 60% of people over age 50 who left a job left it because they were forced to leave their job. And my bet it's even higher than 60% now. And if your age starts with a 5 handle, if you are 50 years or older, brace yourself, because finding another job like the one you just lost will be extremely difficult. Especially, frankly, if you are a white, older, straight male. You are toast. So, reinvention becomes a necessity. It was forced on me with 15 minutes notice when I was fired from a network anchor job that I loved. And I thought I was so good at it, you know? It was the first time I ever got fired, and it was devastating. And it's not till later that you learn that everybody gets fired somewhere, sometime. You learn it's less personal and it's more about business. And you learn how to pick up and move on. After I left Fox News, media companies passed on my particular set of skills. And so did most PR firms. Dennis, you're not a PR guy. You'd be great, but we're going younger. You're a great editor, but we really aren't hiring white men. All of which is okay. So I had to reinvent myself. From ink-stained wretch to crisis whisperer and ghostwriter and content creator. And now, podcast host. One of only 30 or 40 million. TV shows aren't cool anymore. You know what's cool now? Podcasts. I'm channeling Justin Timberlake from the film Social Network, you know? Millionaires versus billionaires. I took 160 hours of training outside Las Vegas, learning how to listen and perceive and engage. I read some books, you know, on your mindset. I took a listening tour among some longtime sources and associates and friends. And eventually I realized that there are new things I can be very good at doing, things that require the same particular set of skills that I have already sharpened in 30 years as a journalist, and things that I enjoy doing. Now, Joanne Littman and I would go a long way back to the Wall Street Journal, where we were reporters. She has had an impressive career. She interviewed hundreds of people for her new book, Next, The Power of Reinvention in Work and Life. It's a kind of survival guide for the 21st century. And if you want to reinvent yourself, I urge you to buy it and read it. It's going to be a bestseller, and those of us who knew Joanne way back when, we are going to be jelly, but happy for her. In the meantime, I offer a few pointers based not on hundreds of interviews, but on my personal experience. First, you are better off making this choice to reinvent yourself rather than having it thrust upon you. If your career is at risk, you already know it. If your marriage is headed for divorce, you already know it. So start making plans now. Second, never leave your job on your own volition without getting paid to give it up. Make them pay you to go out the door, get severance, get some type of buyout, and then act like it hurts. Give the sell, as they say in fake pro wrestling. Third, know that your contacts and connections are a prized asset. Copy them and secure them and have copies of everything stored at home. And fourth, I got 7 points here, guys. Fourth, start reestablishing and refreshing your network of friends and contacts for months before you make a move. Fifth, if you're over age 50, you may want to give up the idea of finding an even higher, better job and think about building your own consulting practice, advising 6 places with a smaller commitment from each of them. 6 out of 7 tips here. and reinventing yourself, you got to pick. You got to do something that you love doing. You've got to find a way to turn it into income. I mean, you may as well not reinvent yourself to just take on another line of work that you don't like. Seventh and finally, no matter how awkward or lost or frustrated you might feel on this journey to reinvention, always keep in mind at any moment, this is just a frozen snapshot of something that already has passed. And better things are looming right up ahead. You just have to be able to spot them. And that is a wrap. Thanks for listening, and have a great day, my friends.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.